Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
This is Good Humans Podcast with me, Cooper Chapman, chatting to the world's best about the inspiring stories that got them to where they are today.
What's going on, you good humans? Welcome to guest episode 138 of Good Humans Podcast with an Olympic gold medalist, world champion, world record holder previously, and Commonwealth Games gold medalist, Zach Stubblety Cook. This guy is an absolute legend and you're going to love this episode. A big thank you to our sponsors, Drinker Rapper. These guys have been supporting my brand and so many of yours for a long time. If you want to learn more about their incredible brain drink, head over to drinkarepa.com. Use the code GOODHUMAN. You can get a 25% off everything over there. But most importantly, you can learn about the science. You can understand what their product is going to do for your brain. Short-term brain performance, basically think of it like an energy drink for your brain, and also helps with long-term brain health. So go check the science out, use that code GOODHUMAN, and yeah, get around it. Also, if you want to learn more about the Good Human Factory, the mental health workshops I run with big corporate groups like McDonald's, Apple, Telstra, Amazon, Red Bull, we've worked with some really big clients recently and would love to come and chat at your workplace or at your high school. You can find all that over on at thegoodhumanfactory.com. Also over there, you can find our merch, the What Are You Grateful For and Be Kind to Your Mind range are absolutely flying off the shelves. So if you use the code podcast, you can get a big 25% off all of our merch as well. And if you see anybody in public wearing Good Human Factory merch, go up to them and ask them what they're grateful for. It's our little community challenge to make sure everyone gets involved and we start spreading those positive vibes around our community. Okay, into today's episode. Zach is a bloody legend. You guys are going to have such a good time listening to this episode. I've spoken to Zach over the last year or two just through socials. We've been having a really good time getting to know each other just virtually online. And then, yeah, we finally got the chance to catch up. Last year, a couple of years ago now, Zach won gold in the Tokyo Olympics, which is just phenomenal. The only male Australian athlete to win a gold medal in the swimming at the Tokyo Olympics. And it was Australia's most successful ever Olympics for swimming. So to win the only gold medal is just crazy. The girls were on fire and Zach, yeah, took home a gold in the 200 meter breaststroke. And he also took home a bronze in the mixed medley, which crazy, so, so cool. And yeah, really love getting to have this chat. If you enjoy the episode, do me a big favor, tell a friend about it, send it on, you can text it to them, you can share it on your social media. It really helps this podcast continue to grow and it's a really good way just to get Zach's story out there because he deserves to be heard by so many of you. Also, if you enjoyed the episode, go and hit that 5-star rating, leave us a little review on Apple or Spotify, or most importantly, just hit that subscribe button because there's so many great episodes to come out this year. We have some really exciting stuff coming up and would love for you guys to check it out. Also, one last thing before the episode, go check out the last 1% podcast episode. Episode 100 was a really special episode where you can learn all about the 1% Good Club, Instagram accountability groups giving 1% of their day to their mental health, 10 minutes of meditation, 4 minutes of gratitude. You can learn all about it on the last episode and hear a really special story from one of the group members. So go check that out. Would love you to let me know what you think of it. All right, let's jump into today's episode. Zach Stubblety Cook, welcome to Good Humans Podcast.
How you going, my man?
Very well, thank you. And I'm very grateful to be here.
Mate, I'm excited for this chat. We've kind of been connecting on socials for, I guess, the last 12 months. You said, I couldn't remember how we first connected, but I posted, who should I get on the podcast about a year ago?
2022,
longer ago, 2 years ago. Yeah. And somebody wrote you and I posted it and tagged you.
Yeah.
And ever since then, you followed me and we've been trying to make it happen.
Yeah.
And here we are. Yeah, we're finally doing it.
It was a beautiful day on the Gold Coast and finally here.
I know. Thank you so much for driving down, by the way, from the beautiful city of Brisbane down to here on the Gold Coast. You said it was raining up there this morning and you've had a big morning of training in the pool. But, yeah. Mate, your story is pretty spectacular. And for someone who's an Olympic gold medalist, a Commonwealth gold medalist, a previous world record holder in the 200 meter breaststroke, it's an honor to sit here with you, but it is also, yeah, it's really exciting for me to get to know your story because I just love young Australian athletes taking the world on and, yeah, getting to the very top. So, mate, how are you going today?
Yeah, really good. I mean, like at the moment, we're in pretty heavy training. We've jumped back on that Olympic train, I guess. I describe it as a bit of trying to jump on a moving train when you get back into training, but it's been a good ride and that motivation's really kicked in for Paris, so. Yeah,
and Paris is coming up pretty bloody soon. I can't wait. There's a lot of people that I'm friends with who were just talking about over a coffee, like all these different people who have been on the podcast and ambassadors for the Good Human Factory. So I'm looking forward to being glued to the TV and watching all you guys this year, but it's going to be epic. But the first question I do always open Good Humans podcast with is, what are you grateful for in life right now today?
I'm grateful for the training I'm able to do. The last 12 months haven't been the best, but I'm really grateful to be been able to train at 100% again.
Yeah, you've been plagued by a few injuries, eh?
Yeah, a few here and there, but hasn't slowed me down too much, which is pretty fortunate. I've taken the rest where I need it, been stubborn occasionally / most of the time, and really pushed, sometimes challenged the physios, I guess, to say like, no, I'm good to go. Other times definitely been guided by them and the doctors to slow down.
It's so hard as an athlete. Hey, you're saying you listened to India Robinson's episode on your drive down and her concussions and having to kind of go against what the doctors thought because they said don't compete, but then she went and won the event. So like you must hear stories like that and be like, it is so important to trust the professionals around you, but you know yourself better than anyone if you can, you know, get through that training session, get back in the pool and yeah, get back to where you want to be after an injury. It's such a hard one sometimes.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it was a moment when she was saying the sports doc told her no. I was like, oh, I saw a specialist and he said the same thing. He was like, oh, you'll be right. Like just take painkillers. But I was like, look, I can deal with like pain for 4 weeks, 5 weeks, whatever. But like chronic pain is a whole other thing to fuck around with. Like I was like, so my sports doctor and I had been managing it for like, you know, 3 weeks at that point and saw him and then it was like, oh, you're fine. It's like, man, like
I don't feel fine.
It still hurts. Like, so, you know, I left the same feeling, like as she said, like frustrated and just like angry and just being like, well, the fuck have I been doing? I've wasted a week and like now I'm going overseas again to compete or am I not? Like, what are we doing? And like, and it didn't help. There was kind of a breakdown of communication. Like ultimately that's what it was. And like, I was lucky. I really just was quite stubborn. I was like, what is happening? We need to work this out like today.
Yeah.
And you know, I'm lucky that it's a team that listen. But like, yeah, I related so much to that. I was like, oh, I know exactly how that feels.
Yeah. You can learn so much just listening to it, even if it's like a completely different sport. We go through similar patterns of things and different ways that we have to deal with stuff. You can learn so much from different people. I love that about the podcast, just hearing a completely different sport going through a similar challenge, whether it be mentally or physically. It kind of all crosses over quite often, which is yeah, super interesting. But, man, we've got a lot to get through today. You've got, as we said, gold medal in the Olympics in Tokyo. Absolutely phenomenal. The only male in the pool to win a gold medal, which is just spectacular. So I can't wait to catch up to that, but we need to get to know the story first. How the hell did you get there? So let's go back to the start. Tell me about your upbringing. Let's talk up until you're in high school, what life was like as a kid, what sort of values you lived by, where you grew up, siblings. What do I need to know about kind of your upbringing that might help me understand what got you to the way you are today?
I think like the biggest thing was like the biggest one, number one thing when I reflect on that part of my life was like, and something I want to bring into my own kids one day is like, opportunity. That was like, that's how I would sum it up, being like, mum and dad always provided us kids with whatever we wanted to do. They'd try and make it happen, and that was purely whether it was swimming, like any sort of sport, school, etc. Like it was like, you know, I wanted to play water polo, okay, we'll go work it out. We want to go play soccer, we'll work it out. Like I think it wasn't a no, but it was always an encouragement and work it out yourself, and that's probably why I think of it as like opportunity. But in terms of swimming, like I used to hate the water, like, believe it or not, like people will go, oh, you must like used to be a water baby and stuff. I'm like, nah, like, you know, I was like scared of the water, like didn't really, like I grew up swimming and mum always took me to learn to swim because, you know, we live in Australia and we love the beach, like you got to, but I hated the pool. And I probably up until I was like 9 or maybe a little bit younger, like 7 or 8, and did like as you start to get that age, you know, your kindy friends and then your school friends start to like go to swim club. And then like one of the people actually who suggested me coming on, like us connecting, I swam with at that age. So like it was always those friendships that brought me into swimming. And I remember like the half lap was the first time I like built up the courage to do swim club. And like I closed my eyes and hit the wall at the other end and ended up doing a full lap and was like, oh, it's not that bad. And then like kind of, you know, the rest is a little bit of history, I guess, of like, you know, I went to Perth for my first ever nationals when I was 9 years old.
Wow, and like, when you're nine for nationals.
Yeah, like that was national, school nationals at that time.
So you picked it up pretty early. Primary school, you were already making the state team and going, where'd you grow up?
Brizzy. So I've grown up in Brizzy and lived in Brizzy my whole life on the south side of Brizzy. And yeah, like I've always loved it. And like people go, oh, why do you love Brisbane? Like, I don't know. It's like something about it. It's just like, it's an easy city. Like it's not Sydney or Melbourne where it's like, like I'll stay to the South Melbourne or I'll stay at Bondi. Like it's a city where you do travel a bit around and are willing to do that. Yeah. But
so 9 years old, first Australian title, school titles. It's funny where I'm here at my place on the Gold Coast and my cousin and my auntie are up from Sydney and you came over when you first got here and you had your gold medal from the Olympics to show me. And I was like, oh, you're coming next door to my cousin. And she was telling us about like, oh yeah, Hunter made it to zone, but can't quite make it to regionals. I always remember those kids at school that would have patches all over them because they'd have like win everything. Were you that kid with just patches all over your uniform?
Just swimming wise. Just swimming wise. But not in any other sport. I think I'm very much specialized in swimming from the
beginning. It always breaststroke?
Early on, and then it transitioned into everything, and then it focused back. So like, yeah, like when I was nine, we flew to Perth for a 40-second race, like, which seems like ridiculous now that I think about it. As like what was mum thinking?
opportunity.
Yeah, it's opportunity and support like for sure. But like, you know, I was like, man, how lucky was I like to do that? Like, I may not have swum if that was the case. Like, you know, so yeah.
Wow. So let's move to high school now. You're obviously starting to get pretty into your swimming if you're already making national titles at 9, 10, 11, coming out of primary school. What was high school like for you? What was that experience like?
Yeah, I mean, I was lucky enough to go to a school that supported the swimming and wanted me to swim and brought me on for swimming. So I was lucky to get a scholarship to a nice school in Brisbane, and I don't think I would be swimming today without that school. If I'm honest, like they school gave me Churchy, so they gave me the opportunity to swim and focus on that. And like, you know, I was lucky that everything was there. So, you know, mum would drop me off at 5 o'clock in the morning and pick me up at 7 p.m. Wow. And like that was kind of the routine for 5 years when I was there. And
wow, so that was what school looked like for you, getting dropped off at that, a pool at school,
yeah,
5 till 7:30 7:38 in the pool, school for the day, back to the pool.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So like, I mean, I'm very grateful for that part of my life, but I guess in terms of swimming, like at the beginning, I was really motivated, new school, new coach, new program, and like absolutely over the moon. And then kind of like probably got a little bit slack in the training and too reliant on the talent.
Yeah.
Which ultimately led to like me not performing how I wanted to. So 14, we had a first ever like junior national team that I was invited to, and the guy I've been racing and still race since I've been 9 years old, Matt Wilson from Sydney, like, and we raced the Olympics together, which was unbelievable. But like he beat me for the first time, and like for me I was like,
wake up call.
Yeah, it was a big wake up call. And you know that, like, and then having a little injury in 2015, so you know a year and a half after that when I was starting to get really motivated,
yeah,
kind of was a point or one of the turning points in swimming. And like very young to have that turning point, but like whether I wanted to continue swimming, because like, you know, you have your mates or like, you know, I want to go be a doctor, I want to be a lawyer, and you're like, I want to swim.
Yeah, do I want to keep swimming? Because it's such an interesting thing being a young professional athlete. We were talking about this as well on the walk to grabbing a coffee before. It's such like a shiny thing to chase, but then you kind of forget that quite really 99% of people that pursue an athletic career don't make it to anywhere, let alone to winning an Olympic gold medal. So it's crazy to think that you had that thought process when you're 15, 16 years old. Is this really my future? What made you go, you know what? Okay, I got to stick at this.
I think like, so at the same time, like they'd found a tumor in my shoulder, a benign tumor that we just had to cut out, but it put me out of the water for, you know, 3 months. And at that time I was deciding on whether to extend my schooling for another year to focus on swimming whilst balancing school. And I was like, I don't know what it was, but I had this inkling to be like, well, it's only another year and it doesn't matter. And I kind of said to myself as well, like, and I don't even remember this, but I went back to the school a couple of years ago and one teacher said to me, she said, oh, you know, you put a date on yourself. You said, if I'm not on the senior national team by the time you're 21, then that's it. And I was like, wow, like, who was I like at school? Like, I don't even remember saying that, but like, it kind of like all worked out to like that kind of timeline anyway. And I kind of look back and I know I was thinking in the frame of, you know, I guess if I don't make it, it's only another year of my life and I want to put my best foot forward because you're only young once.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I was very lucky that I had some older people around me kind of guiding me through that and some really great mentors at that point in time helping me through all that.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I was just quite driven and quite stubborn as well, I guess.
Yeah. So let's talk about getting towards the end of school. What does it look like if you want to chase being a professional swimmer? What does that next chapter look like for you? Say you finished school. Did you finish school and HSC or whatever it's called, ATAR? What did you think like straight after school was going to look like? What is that next step for a professional swimmer? Were you going to like Youth Olympics? Were you going to Youth World Titles at this time? Were you already on your way to becoming like you're the fastest of all time at one stage to swim a 200 meter breaststroke, which is just unbelievable. So how how good were you at the end of school and how far away is that Olympic dream from the end of school, say from 18?
Yeah, so 18, I was still at school about to finish.
Yeah.
At that time I'd moved programs. So I'd moved from the school program to kind of a professional group. So I was like with Jack McLaughlin, Jess Ashwood, and then there was a couple of other guys who like Jack and Jess, who Jess had been a bronze medalist at the world champs. So like, and Jack was like nudging on that door. And then like, he had a really successful 2018 Com game. So like I saw some of the best in the world and like had moved into that program. And my year 12, I was away for like 10 or 12 weeks of like, you know, a 30 week year. So like, it wasn't really viable not to do a 3 year senior if I wanted to pursue that and have the commitment to that.
Yeah.
And I guess I was at the World Juniors that year, so 2017, and I was bronze in 2017 at World Juniors. And, you know, like I learned a lot from that, and then it was a full commitment to that while studying as well. Like I knew that I wanted something to fall back on if it didn't work out. Like I'm as much as optimist as I am a pessimist. Like I'm very much a, you know, okay, that's all good and well, but like what happens if this happens? Like very much love that scenario planning of like X, Y, Z, and we'll look at best case, but it's pretty likely it's not going to happen.
Yeah.
And for me, that's ultimately probably the attitude I took in. And 2018, the year after, like I'd fully committed to swimming, was studying part-time.
At uni?
Yeah.
Okay, so you finish school and then you go straight into a university course.
Yeah.
Let's talk about that real quickly because I want to make everything mostly about swimming here, but I think it's really important for young athletes who might listen to this, other swimmers who might listen to this, to have something to fall back on. It was something that I was always, my parents were like, you got to finish school. Like, I could have dropped out and just started surfing from year 10. I was getting paid already. But my parents are always like, it's only 2 years of your life, like you were kind of saying. They're like, you're not going to get them back to finish school. Just do it. And I'm so glad I did. Are you glad you got all the way to the end?
Absolutely. I think like I've always taken the approach of like you're a person first before you're an athlete.
Yeah.
And like ultimately your athletic career might last till you're 35 if you're absolutely luckiest. Yeah,
in the 0.1%.
Yeah. The 0.1% of the 1%, right? Like, but for me, like, you know, it might last till I'm 30. So what are you going to do for the next 50 years?
Yeah.
Like you, if you're not finishing school or not having a backup plan or not having some sort of, you know, personal brand, whether that's speaking, et cetera, like if you're not having something to fall back on at 30, like
you're starting from the bottom at 30 again.
Yeah.
It's wild. So what are you studying? So you went straight after school into studying. What are you studying?
I was studying biomed at that point because I thought I'd do neurology, but that kind of fell apart pretty quick because I love like the brain and like how much impact we can actually have on it and mm-hmm. that we're still learning. Neuroplasticity
is fascinating, hey?
Wild. And like now they've discovered that new part of the brain that's like directly linked to willpower and like it grows and shrinks based on whether you do hard things. Like, I was listening to a Huberman podcast on the weekend.
Mises and stuff.
Yeah. And like he was talking to Goggins about like, and he was like, we should just name it the Goggins effect, like this do hard things thing. And like, it's very interesting that like we're still even learning. So that's what I wanted to do. And then after that, like it didn't really fit with swimming. It didn't really fit with me.
Mm-hmm.
So then I moved into like a business, a little bit more generic and
dual. Gives you options post a bit more.
Exactly. And I did a bit of psych as well. So I was doing a business psych degree for up until last year. And then.
So you just kind of like you're 25 now. Yeah. So you've kind of just been doing everything obviously a little bit slower because you're full-time swimming, part-time uni. How has the juggle been?
I mean,
who do you do it with? I saw you have like a partner with Monash or something.
Griffith. Yeah. So Griffith, I've been lucky, like they've looked after me from day one. Like,
that's amazing.
To be fair, like they have two Olympic gold medalists running sports college, so they understand.
the commitment it takes.
Yeah. Like Duncan and Naomi have looked after me from day one. So for me, they've been very understanding and easy to work with.
Cool.
And I've been lucky now that they've partnered with Swimming Australia. So like, you know, I've just like been like, yep, this is cool. Like,
epic.
Yeah. So from there, like I've always had something ticking over in the background.
It's good to have your mind not like completely focused on swimming because that's how you get burnout so easy when it's just like everything. And then it makes the lows even lower because it's like, oh my God, I got nothing else. Whereas like you said, human first, athlete second. Yeah. So important. Let's keep going with swimming now. So you finish school, you're studying. What does it look like for the journey? Because there is some people who are 18, 19 that make it to the Olympics. How close were you to being able to make it to Rio 26? Oh, no, that's a bit.
Rio 2016 was the first time I went to an open like nationals.
Swim meet. Wow. Yeah.
So, and I think I was 12th in the two breast.
Yeah.
So like nowhere near.
So you had a lot of work to do.
Yeah. I think I was a 2:16 swimmer then, and now I'm 2:05, but
you shaved 11 seconds. Yeah. That's a big.
Yeah. So, but up until 2018, went 2:07.
Okay. Wow. So you picked up the pace in that 2 years. What changed in your train? So you got 11th in the open meet to go to Rio. 4 years later, you're the world record holder, the Olympic gold medalist. Let's talk about that period. What if something accelerated, something happened? What was the magic thing?
I think like shifting coaches and then seeing some of the best in the world and seeing what it actually takes.
Yeah.
Like for me, that was the biggest difference. And just like you move from a mindset of like a not mature athlete to a mature athlete where it's like, it's not whether you can do it, it's how. Like it's not, oh, I might do that. No, it's like, I will do that and like, I'll get it done.
Yeah, wow.
I think that's the mindset you really shift to, and you shift to like something that is all consuming and something that runs your life, but like you learn to have that balance as well. Cause as you just said, like it's a dangerous game, dipping your toes in that sense. So yeah, like that shift is a lot to do with that. And in 2018, I went to the Commonwealth Games and I was a 2:10 swimmer and I swam a 2:15 in the heat. Like dog shit. I had probably like the worst swim I'd had in maybe 3 or 4 years.
And talk me through that. What is it like for someone who's out there listening right now? Like obviously 2:10 means you swam it in 2:10 before, but then you swam it in 2:15. What's like, is it you're going out too hard and you die towards the end? It's like, cause there's so many like intricacies swimming a race that's that long, like 200's four laps of the pool. It's so much strategy, I'm guessing, that goes into that and knowing when to push and when to kind of sit in someone's wake. Like, yeah, talk me through what happened in that race to, not have a good race in. Where was 2018?
Com Games was here.
I was here.
Gold Coast.
Gold Coast.
Yeah, the Southport Pool. So, yeah, like that race was the first time I was at open international meet. And like, if I'm honest, my race plan is typically like you'd follow a race plan, you follow a process. And ultimately, like, that meet was like, I was starstruck, overwhelmed, like, you name it, I was feeling it. I probably didn't switch off for like 2 weeks. Like, it was an interesting time because it was like, you look up to people like, you know, Mac, Carl, those kind of guys. And like, for example, like Cam, I was rooming with Cam, Maggie,
Cam,
like McAvoy.
Yeah.
And James Magerson, like, I was rooming with Mac, and you're like,
I'm around my heroes.
You're like,
and it's your first international yeah,
date. And you're like, and then you walk out for the race and there's 10,000 Aussies like screaming and you're like, oh my God, like, what the fuck?
What time won the gold in that com game?
208, like 3, I think.
Okay. See, like, if you swam your 210 at your best, you could have medaled there? Or
maybe probably would have been like 4th, yeah. Okay. But yeah, like, so after that, I knew I could have done better and I kind of fell into this really negative space and was diagnosed with depression. And that's probably the biggest shift I've had, like, worked with the same psych since then.
Yeah.
And we've worked really well together and like gelled really well together to the point now where like he'll come into the gym and be like, what's up? And you'll be like, oh, fuck, like, I'm caught out. But like 3 months after that, the work we did, we were seeing each other weekly.
Mm-hmm.
And the work we did together, like, I swam 207.2 3 months later.
Wow.
So like it was
all up here, eh?
Yeah. It was purely mental. Like,
yeah. Tell me about that if you want to go into it a little bit. But after seeing the psych, what was kind of the core, or like what was the root? Because I know for instance, when I started seeing my psych and telling him, probably very similar age, 21, 22, about myself kind of struggling. I was never diagnosed with depression, but I was just kind of telling him how I felt. And for me, it came back to this idea that my whole identity was Cooper the Pro Surfer. When my results were doing really well, I felt good. And when I was doing poorly, I felt really shit. Similar to you? Or what?
Absolutely.
Is that a lot of it? Like, oh, I didn't reach my goal in the thing. Like, everyone thinks shit of me, but...
Yeah, it's absolutely that. And it's like this... I got this identity caught up with not feeling good enough ever.
Yeah.
Like, it was never good enough. Even if it was doing my best. Like, it was this vicious cycle of having a crap training session. And, like, during...
a bad person because of it.
Oh, exactly. And, like, during that time, I, like, still have sessions where I'm like, I don't really want to do that because it's, like, that was during that really dark period. Like, I, like, was so negative on myself where I'd get to the pool anxious and then have a panic attack in the water and be like, I don't want to do this. And, like... for me, getting through that has shown me like it is like anything's possible. And but like it was all tied back to this like stupid belief like that you weren't good enough for some odd reason. And whether we like it or not, our brain sometimes plays tricks on us.
Yeah.
And like
your first international meet, you start saying like, oh, I just am not a good international swimmer. Yeah. It's like, oh, the stories we tell ourselves are just so toxic sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wild. So what was he saying to you that kind of helped you in that 3 months? Because obviously you've swum your fastest ever 3 months after having maybe one of your worst meets, probably looking back.
Mm.
What was some of the stuff that he was taking you through? Because I'm sure there's someone listening right now who is in that pretty victim mindset, in that destructive mind right now. What were some of the helpful things that you got told to help you with your mental health through that dark time?
I think like we moved away from an outcome focus and purely to, well, one, the simplest thing was the controllable.
Yeah.
And like, what can you control and what are you going to do to help yourself first and foremost? And like, for me, that was like, I got back into a bit more photography and taking photos and enjoying that journey a bit more and being like, how fucking cool is this? Like, I'm representing the country. And then I think the other piece was like, what, like learning where the hooks are. So like for me, like it was that
catching yourself. It's that self-awareness.
Yeah. So it was absolutely that was like, yeah. Like, and I still do it today, like with different things. Cause like different things frustrate me for sure now, but like, watching for those hooks, watching for those, like, what do I need? Like, and I think it's probably progressed still to this day and I'm still learning about it. But today now it's like, it's more about what do I emotionally need than physically. Like, physically is taken care of most of the time.
It's the controllables.
Yeah. Yeah. So for me, it's like now it's all about, okay, am I emotionally getting joy out of what I'm doing? Like, is this person going to give me that? Mm. And being like, no. So why am I asking them for it?
Yeah.
And I think that ultimately like helped me mature as an athlete.
Yeah.
And yeah, like back then, yeah, I was a young 18-year-old ready to conquer the world and wanted to do it all. And I can still remember like we had to retrial for that meet because I swam, didn't swim as well. Like I didn't swim well enough to be qualifying for Pan Pacs. And so 2018 Com Games, didn't swim well enough to qualify for Pan Pacs 3 months later.
Which is like another international meet.
Yeah. It's like, so if you were putting it on a hierarchy, you put Olympics, World Champs, Pan Pacs, Com Games.
Wow. Okay. So is it bigger than Com Games?
For certain events.
Because it's international, whereas Com Games is only the Commonwealth, obviously.
Yeah. And Com Games, like, well, because Pan Pacs includes America.
Yeah. It adds. Yeah.
It's a different game.
Absolutely.
And then so I had to requalify, but I can distinctly remember like ticking every box and the feeling I had before, and I've never had it maybe once after that, but like the feeling I had behind the blocks at that Pan Pac trials, I was like, no one's getting in my fucking way. Like this is happening. It was like, it wasn't confidence in the sense of like, I'm the best in the world. Like I'm going to rip it into this. It was like, I believe in myself. Like it was the complete opposite of what I was like at Com Games. Mm-hmm. And it took a lot to get there, but like I probably never felt like that since. Yeah, but like,
how'd you go in that and then qualifying?
The qualifying, that's when I swam 208. So I was like, that was the first time I broke 210, which is a big milestone in 200 breast. So like, that's a big step. And then a couple of weeks later it was 207.
Wow. So you qualify for that. Let's fast forward. What did you do a world champs before? You won a world champs before the Olympics, eh? No.
So I was fourth.
The Olympics, your first ever international first.
Yeah. So I was fourth.
You did it the right one, didn't you?
Yeah. Got to peak the peaks, right?
Yeah.
So I was fourth in 2019 in the world champs. Yeah. So behind an Aussie, a Russian, and a Japanese guy.
Sounds like the start of a joke.
Yeah.
So let's talk about the qualification now for the Olympics. So you got fourth in the world champs.
Mm-hmm.
It's got to hurt not getting a medal there, but also shows you, okay, I'm obviously trajecting in the right way. I had the shocker in the Com Games. How'd you go in that Pan Pac Games?
I was second to that.
Okay, so that's
It was the first time I beat Matt Wilson, the Aussie.
Okay.
So it was the first, so the guy I grew up with racing, it was the first time I'd beaten him in 4.5 years.
Wow.
So it was like, I'd prove to myself I can be the best Aussie. Like, because he was ruling the pool since the Rio trials.
Yeah.
And for breaststroke. And it was the first time I'd been like, nah, like, this is my time to rip in. So, and then like a year later, he beat me, but
a year later. Yeah. Crazy.
Yeah.
So now let's talk about, you get fourth in the world, 2019, 2020 is coming around, an Olympic year.
Mm-hmm.
2020 is a bit of a weird year. So let's talk about what qualification looks like for you to make the Olympic team.
Mm-hmm.
And then the speed bumps that did come into your way for Tokyo, because I know obviously everything got pushed back a year. So what was that like for you?
So like 2019, you get fourth in the world and I'm like, we're in the right spot because like I'm low profile. Like,
can only be an underdog once.
Yeah. Low profile. I'm training like the right direction. We're moving well. All of those things are going well. And like 2020, probably really hungry, like excited. I'm like, oh, I'm going to go to the Olympics. Like, this is really cool. And our qualification looks like we have a meet, our trial meet 5 to 6 weeks before the major meet. So for Paris this year, it's June and the Olympics is July, end of July. So, you know, it is quite tight. And you have to be, to qualify for the two breast, you have to be in the top eight in the world from the, based on the last year's times or the last major meets times. So for us next year, it's a 2.088-ish. And that's the qualification, as simple as that. And then like you can qualify via relays, but you have to be within certain times. And as I was saying to you before, like if you're taken as a relay swimmer, you have to swim. Like, so even if you go, they've made all these new rules that, you have to swim. So
wait, only eight people can qualify for the 200 meter
No, so
8 plus the relay, so like 8 are guaranteed.
So if you're so top 8 in the world is the time, and then top 2 in Australia go.
Yeah, wow.
Based on that top 8 time, but if you're outside that top 8 and there's only one of you,
yeah,
you'll go. So like, okay. Yeah. So if there's 2 of you close to that top 8 time,
you go.
No one will go.
Oh, no one will go. So if for example, you're not inside the top 8, you don't make it. No one from your country goes.
Yeah. So for example, there would have been the men's 2IM in Tokyo. We had an Aussie race it, or two Aussies race it, but no one qualified for it. So those two boys were 4IM swimmers, the 400IM swimmers, and they, because they were there and they had a FINA Ray qualifying time, so the governing body's qualifying time, they're allowed to swim. But like according to our qualifying criteria, they weren't selected on a 200IM time.
Okay, interesting.
It's really, there's
a lot of politics. Let's skip the politics now and talk about you qualifying for Tokyo. What did that look like?
Yeah, so our qualification, so I should tell you the story about like the COVID one.
Yeah,
that was
because you qualified, but then it got ripped away and said actually we're gonna have to get you to re-qualify next year.
Nah, so we were in full prep, like full go mode for Tokyo trials.
Yeah.
And I think it was March-ish.
Yeah, March it happened. Yeah.
And we were swimming in the morning at Chandler and our coach told us, oh, they've closed the complex. So there was like one lifeguard left that everyone, all the public swimmers were out. And we was like, oh, we'll finish off the session. Like they're not going to cancel anything. They just, it'll be all right. Like full denial. And anyway, he's like, we'll find somewhere to swim that afternoon / tomorrow morning. He texted us at like 10 a.m. saying, can't find anywhere to swim. Everyone's closed the pools. I'll find somewhere for the morning. Train yourself this afternoon. So all of us go for a swim. Like I go to a local pool at Centenary and I remember getting out and having like 4 text messages from a bunch of people and then an email. And the email was like, Swimming Australia, important. And I was like, oh, cool. Open it and they're like, ScoMo's now announced, or Scott Morrison has now announced that we will no longer send an Australian team to the Olympics. And we're like, oh, fuck, like, cool. So, like, at that point, the Olympics hadn't been delayed yet.
Yeah.
But we were kind of like paused on training. And then everything kind of over the next 2 days kind of shut down.
Everyone pulled out of the Olympics. Yeah. So, the Olympics got postponed.
Yeah. And then the Olympics got postponed, which, to be honest, like, in hindsight, was an absolute blessing for me, like gave me a whole other year of maturity as an athlete. Because I think, like my psych and I, we've spoken about this a lot, being like, we both believe that if I raced in 2020, I wouldn't have had the result I had.
Wow.
Purely because I was like, I was falling into that same mindset of like 2018 of like not being good enough or like tying results to like personality. Like it wasn't a good, it was a good thing in hindsight, but like at the time, it hurt.
Yeah, I bet it hurts because you spend years trying to train for this Olympic and then you get told, oh, we're not going. It's like, oh my god, another 4 years maybe.
Yeah.
So then through 2020, still obviously finding ways to train.
Yeah,
still swimming somewhere.
Yeah, so I was swimming at like one of my mate's places. He just had a pool and like tied a rope to the fence and just was swimming like stationary for like half an hour a day just to keep the feel of the water. And then doing a lot of gym work. And I like Mac Horton and Jack McLaughlin, like we did a lot of Zwift sessions together, like on the bike. Like we'd all be virtually logging at like 5 a.m. and just like sit on the bike for 3 hours together. And it was like we kind of made the most of what we had.
Yeah.
And I think I can still remember it was like weird. We'd do gym sessions together, like our squad.
Virtually.
And you're like,
it feels so weird thinking back to the time, like a couple of years ago. It just like, it's like, we actually did all that stuff.
Yeah. Like quarantine. When you explain quarantine to someone, you're like,
well, we're going to catch up to that because you had a beautiful quarantine because you sat there with 2 medals around your neck. A bit better than some other people.
Yeah.
A bit better than the guy who came fourth.
Yeah.
So let's talk about now. Fast forward past 2020, 2021. All right, Olympics are on this year. COVID settling down a little bit.
Yeah.
What was qualification like for you? And finding out you're going to the Olympics for the first time. Tell me about that email or message or finishing a race that meant that you got that Olympic swimming cap.
Yeah, so I won the 100 breast that year. So like that kind of not pre-qualified me, but put me in number one spot for the relay.
Yeah.
And then the 200 breast was a couple of days later. and that was like my pet event. The 100 was like a bonus. So yeah. I was lucky that I was like, it took a little bit of pressure off that 200 breast.
So because you did that, you kind of qualified to go to the Olympics for the 100 meter breast in the relay.
Yeah.
So no matter what, you get to go. And then unless somebody swims under the 210, you'd still probably get the spot
yeah.
in the 200 breast because you're there
yeah.
and could swim it.
Okay. Yeah, absolutely. So it took the pressure off. So absolutely took that pressure off. And then I was swimming really freely that year. Like I'd swum a 207 in season. Like I'd swum a PB in season, like under full training. I was like really confident in my process, really confident in the way I was swimming and swimming really openly and freely, like mentally, not just physically, and like really in control of the stroke. Because sometimes breaststroke's one of those fiddly strokes where you like, you try harder and you go slower. I guess like any sort of...
It's like in the golf ball.
Yeah, exactly the same. You're like terrible. But yeah, like, so you qualify and then you kind of get an interview and you're like, fuck, did that just happen? And then I think the moment where it really hits you is when the team gets announced and your name gets called and you shake hands with like the head of the AOC and like Dawn Fraser, for example, and you're like, fuck, like,
I'm an Olympian.
Yeah. And then I think the next time it really, like, you kind of then go back and get a bit of reality check that you have to go straight back into training. Yeah. But I think the next time it kind of hit was like when we dressed up in our opening ceremony uniform and had like a couple of older athletes speak to us as well as some guests, and then got that letter. We get a letter from a former Olympian, a former Olympic swimmer, and it kind of like congratulates you. And then
give some words of wisdom.
Yeah. And then like, that's probably when it like really hits you and you're like, fuck, like this is really cool. And then,
and now I'm going to get to write one of these letters in 20 years to one of the kids. Like, yeah. It's so cool, man. Yeah. Like to be an Olympian is like such a dream for so many young athletes, and to get that opportunity is so special, but then to maximize on the opportunity and bring a gold medal home. I can't wait to talk to you through the story for a little bit. So what did it feel like when you got that box delivered to your house and you know inside that box is like all your Olympic gear? Is that like the best delivery you've ever
got? We got it.
Did you get it given to you in like a big bag?
Yeah, we got it when we got to the village. It was in our room.
Oh, so it's already there when you get, I thought you'd get, but don't you have to fly over wearing your Olympic stuff?
Yeah, so we got given, I think like one outfit, two t-shirts and a pair of shorts and then got like told you have to wear this on the deck, like I guess the tarmac onto the plane, and that was it. Okay. We all got changed, but like, and then off the plane you'll have to wear it as well. But yeah, like I think this is a little bit different in that sense that
because of COVID it was so different this 2021 Olympics, because you didn't get crowds or anything. So let's talk about touching down in Tokyo. What does it look like? Obviously swimming's at the start of the event too. No opening ceremony. Was there no opening ceremony at all in Tokyo, or just not?
I think there was but yeah,
just not for swimmers because you guys start.
Yeah, we start because Kate Campbell was the flag bearer.
Yeah.
So she went, and like it is a long day. Like you go the day before and it's like they leave at like 2 PM and get home at like midnight.
Oof.
So it's like a big day to do it. And she wasn't swimming for the first couple of days, so she had the time to recover. But most of us were swimming day one, day two. Yeah. So I didn't go, but and majority of the team didn't go. And, you know, but when you get to the village, it's like nothing else. It's like you all, like, it's beyond like your, like, it is part of, like, you have this pride in your country. Like, that's a given. But I think what I felt when I got to the village was like this sense of like, and I saw it written, I think it was like another team's, it was one team, one dream. And you're like, that is so true, because everyone here dreamt of being at the Olympics, and now everyone is living that dream. Like, how lucky is, you know, the 10,000 athletes that are there. And I think everyone's really happy and bubbly in that village, and you go to the dining hall and you see, like, you know, NBA players and you're like, where the fuck am I? Like,
yeah.
It's a strange place in that sense. I think like it was a little bit clouded by COVID, like, you know, we walked into the dining hall, put on gloves, and had Perspex cleans screens between us all, and like, yeah, so that was a little bit of a downer. But yeah, I think ultimately like the buzz couldn't be denied.
Yeah,
but I think like 2018, that experience like gave me the opportunity to learn how to deal with that, because like,
yeah, that's what I was gonna say, because you kind of got pretty overwhelmed, it seems like, in your first comm games.
Yeah.
and you obviously didn't let it get to you at this next one. Like, I'm excited once we get to race day, like what was going through your head that's different, what maturity you feel like you took into it that was different to the other one. So yeah, tell me about what were your first day of the Olympics?
Yeah, so I was day one was the 100 breast.
How'd that go?
Yeah, well, I'll tell you about the camp beforehand. Tell me about the camp. So, because you'd find this interesting, and like I've written in the book, like there's a photo of me having a scan. So we got rushed off so when we were flying to, we were always going to go to Cairns, but it was about to lock down Brisbane, and we were like, you can get on the charter flight from Brisbane, but you'd have to train by yourself quarantined. Because you have to quarantine for 2 weeks before you flew into the Olympic Village.
Yeah.
So you weren't allowed contact with anyone but your team. Or inside the bubble, as like we saw in the NRL and everything. Yeah, yeah. So, and because of that, we missed our Monday night, which is a key session for the week. It's like one of the three key sessions. And so we ended up putting it on Tuesday. So we got like rushed off. We got called at 1:30 and we're on a flight at 4 p.m.
Wow.
It was like, you need to get out of here. Like, we're about to lock
down. Brisbane locks down and you get stuck.
Yeah. So, and Brisbane locked down the next day. So we're very grateful we got out. But that ended up causing like a domino effect of like, oh, we'll just keep training really hard and like make up those sessions. And we did make up those sessions. And ultimately, I think it's probably what led to me having a tear in my groin. So like breaststroke, your groin is like one of the things that it's always stressed, but the worst time for it to happen is like right before a meet, because like you can't kick properly, you can't load it. Yeah. So it was 2.5 weeks before the Olympics, and like the head noise that was there was like unbelievable, because it was like, and I just said to the coach, like, I do not want it scanned. Like, I don't want to know. Like, I'm happy to limp my way through this.
Like,
yeah. Like, do not want to know, because like, if I know that there's something wrong and I'm going to cause more damage, like I'm going to carry that through the heat, the semi and the final. Like, I'm going to have that little voice in regardless of like how headstrong you are. And ultimately, like, we did get a scan against my will, and then we found that like there was a tear and it had healed pretty much. But like, you know, that shrouded that whole Olympics. But like, it made me have to think about the process that much more and be like, you've done the work. Like, this is the polish. And once we got to the village, it kind of like all kind of rolled into place. But going into that day one, like bring it back to that day one, like I swam like what I believed not as well as I wanted.
Yeah.
And then that head noise all started again, just to be like, well, fuck, like, is it because I haven't swum breaststroke for 2 weeks? You know, like, is it, have I missed my timing? Have I, like, you know, you start to question everything.
Like, oh, is it because I'm at an international meet? It's my first Olympics. Is it the pressure? Is it the questions just start coming? So you did that first heat. Do you not make it to the semis in the 100?
No.
Okay.
No semi, no final. So that was it for that till my 2 breast. And I was like, you know, left for 4 days to be like, you know, you have to refresh, get better, hit a little bit of work so you can feel that load again and hit more of that 200 stuff. And then, you know, like the 2 breaths, that heat, I was so nervous because of that 100 breaths. I was like, fuck, like this could be it. This could be like, because all we spoke about for the 3 years prior was like to swim your best race in the Olympic final, that's all you can ask.
Yeah.
And like whether you win or lose, you'd be happy with that.
Yeah.
And that's why I was the most nervous, because I was like, I don't know how I'm going to go.
Yeah.
Like I swam average and now I'm like, fuck, like do it. Like, is this going to happen again? And I'm going to miss it again. Is it going to be Comm Games all over again?
Yeah. Like, wow.
So, you know, that was the most nervous I'd been. And like, I got through the heat first and I was like, oh, this is fun. Like,
yeah,
now it's like about enjoying this moment. Yeah. And like the semi was that next morning, because we had flipped. So normally we're morning heats, finals at night. Yeah. But
because of the scheduling was a bit weird in Tokyo.
Yeah, it was the opposite. So like 10 a.m. was the finals. So semi final, I was lucky. I was in because I was qualified first. I was semi-final two, so you get to watch the first.
You know the times that you need to get the best lanes.
Yeah,
hard to push.
Yeah, so like I was lucky that you know I was in full control of myself and like in that race as well because I knew other people were going to pace off me.
Yeah.
Because at the time, like I was going in, like overall, like based on historical data, I was going in second overall. Yeah. And first based on like the last 12 months.
Yeah.
So
you're in form.
Yeah. I was ready to go. And like that semi is probably one of my favorite races, but the final, like.
Did you do the semi and the final on the same day?
No. So the day off. Yeah, you get a full 24 hours. Yeah. So yeah, like
you. So you win your semi.
Yeah.
In the best lane for the final.
Yeah. Lane four for the final. So I was coming out last. So like, yeah. When you get called out, you come out last. Yeah.
How's that feel getting called out for Olympic final? Zach's double Eddie's cook.
It's interesting. I mean, like.
Hard though, because there's no crowds too. Like, what an interesting event.
I mean, I was lucky some of the team was finished. Yeah. So, like, we had some of the team in the.
Cool.
In some the. Aussies, yeah. Yeah. And, like, I didn't really, like, look up at them beforehand. Yes. Definitely after. But, like. Yeah. Beforehand, like mindset wise, like walking out into that final, it was like still, it was really? Like, I don't know how to describe it in words, but like I've only ever had that feeling probably twice. And it's like pure, like you're hyper dialed, but everything's like still, and you're just like, your thoughts are like flowing really well. But you're not overthinking. You're just like, oh, like for example, process. Yeah. Oh, it's pure process and pure like
flow.
Mm. Oh, it was incredible. And that's probably like my last memory beforehand. And like my last thing I remember, I thought about the last two things were, I remember right before I stood on the block, looking down the end of the pool and seeing like there's like 20, 30 cameras, and then there's like these giant Olympic rings and the podiums behind all the cameras. And I was like, fuck yeah, like how cool is this? Like, this is the Olympic final. Like, this is all I wanted. This is the dream right here. And like, I get to be a part of it. And like, for me, that was already enough of an accomplishment. So whatever happened after that was like, not a bonus. And I don't want to say it's a bonus because like people are like, oh, like you're saying Olympic gold is a bonus. But it's like, I am not one of the people that dreamt of winning gold. I was just wanted to be an Olympian. Yeah. I wanted to represent the country. And like, I knew that winning gold was like, it's so far beyond like what is normal.
Yeah, exactly.
That like, yeah, it was just like so far fetched. And like, then to be in that position, you're like oh, what? Shit, holy. Yeah. And then, yeah, like to touch the wall, I just didn't believe it. I was like, no.
Tell me about that final. Tell me how'd you swim that final? What, obviously there's probably not much going through your head at all, but yeah. Tell me, how does it feel like jumping off that block? Do you lift because it's the Olympic final, or is it like, I got to keep calm myself. It's not like a 50 meter freestyle where it's just like fucking go as hard as you can. You have to play a bit of a game and a bit of strategy. How was that swim for you?
Yeah. For me, it was like
I was making the turn on the last turn and you go, I have to swim to the end of that wall. And if I'm the fastest, I win a gold medal. Like what's, how's that feeling that last 50?
Like the first 50, I remember my togs filling with water. Like the suit, like, so sometimes if you don't pull your, you feel like this tiny bit of water and you're like, fuck. And then I was like, all I was thinking was don't panic. Like, like that was the last thought. And then after that, for me, like it was all process. Like it was all like length, build, stay in contact with the guy next to me. Cause I knew he would go for it. And then I had no idea apart from him and the other guy next to me where anyone was. And I remember turning at the 100 and being like, oh, like I'm a bit behind, like, but I was like, no, I'm like in the, I'm in the right place, like we're in the right zone. And then that last 50, I remember like about 25 to go, like just hearing some of the crowd, like the tiny bit of crowd that was in there, like starting to hear that. And I remember touching the wall and like looking up at the board and then looking at the Aussies and them just going crazy. And I was like, oh my God, like that just happened. Like,
man, I got goosebumps just thinking about that.
Yeah. It was a like full like elation, like not like no other. Like it's wild.
Mate, that's so sick. Like congratulations. You're the only Aussie male to win a gold medal at the Tokyo Olympics. And when you think back to Australian swimming and men's Australian swimming, mate, that's an achievement that not many can say they've done. So you should be so proud. I'm excited for the next kind of chapters of the journey. Then you went on to win a bronze medal as well in that Olympics. What was that race like?
Yeah, so I'd won the gold. You have like press conferences and all that media stuff afterwards. And, you know, I think I swam at 10:30
in the morning,
quarter to 11 maybe. And I left the pool at 2 p.m. So I was just like, but after I'd swum, I got this like, one of the relay coach came up to him and was like, congrats, you're swimming tonight.
Oh, was it the same night?
Yeah, so the heat was that night. And I was like, oh, cool. No worries. Like, I guess I'll park that I just won. Like,
a gold medal. Yeah. And like, call every person I know that wants to chat to me and be like, I'll chat to you after the Olympics.
Yeah. So then like I swam that night and that was really cool to be a part of. Like we had our most successful games in the pool ever.
Wow.
In Tokyo. And you think about like Australian swimming history, like it's pretty wild to think about like that. And it's pretty humbling to think about that I was like a part of that.
Yeah.
And yeah, like.
And added to the success, bringing home two medals.
Yeah. So Emma and Kaylee were still racing.
Yeah.
And the Matt Temple and myself were the two males and there was two females. So it was the first time it'd been raced a mixed gender event at the Olympics. It'd been raced at World Championships before, but this is the first time it's been raced at the Olympics. And Matt Temple and I were both finished our individual races and we were the only two in marshalling because Kaylee and Emma were like racing and then racing, like coming straight to the marshalling room. So we're like, oh my God, like this is crazy. Like we're just sitting here and we get to race with the greatest Australian Olympian of all time. Not quite at that point, but now she is. Yeah. And Kaylee, who's like on her way to be the greatest female backstroker ever, like full stop. So like it was really humbling to race with those two girls and like really cool to have a team dynamic and very different.
How good does it feel standing on stage with like a team of Aussies getting a medal and watching the flag get pulled up?
So sick. Like it's unbelievable. Like that and like standing on the podium with one of your best mates is like two of the best memories I have from swimming.
So what is it? You swim 100 meters breaststroke in that one?
Yeah. So Kaylee swims 100 back. Breast, fly, free.
Okay.
So Emma's in the free. So because it's mixed gender, each team has their own strategy.
Yeah, okay.
Which is like kind of been really cool to see.
Yeah, because it's like, do you put, obviously, men's times are a little bit faster than women's at the top level. So it's like, which stroke are you going to pick up the most on?
Yeah, exactly. And like as a percentage, or do you have the depth in that event? So for example, like our 100 fly is like our women, like Emma won the 100 fly.
Yeah.
So do you put Emma in the 100 fly and then put a male 100 freestyler, or do you put the female 100 freestyler who's maybe, you know, 3 seconds?
Do you pick up the gap?
So it's quite interesting in that it's really, really strategic. So, you know, like Emma was racing Caleb Dressel, you know, probably arguably in the top five greatest American Olympians of all time. And like, so, you know, like he's chasing her and it's like, it's so cool to watch because the race changes hands so often.
So what was the final like in that one? How close was it?
The Brits.
First, second, third?
Yeah, we were third.
What do you swim though? Like
second. Yeah. So We were one of two countries in the final to swim a female backstroker. So we're behind from the beginning.
Okay.
And then like I'm there to swim, trying to get a bit of ground and swim over some of the girls doing breaststroke from other countries. And then Matt's trying to maintain lead or gain a bit more.
Butterfly.
And then Emma's trying to hold everyone off.
Yeah. Wow.
Which is weird because like, for example,
a lot will finish with an explosive male 100 free to try and
swim over the top. And as well, like some of the strategy comes to do with swimming through wake. So like, so like typically some of the girls, like especially through men's wake, is like struggle.
Tough, yeah.
Like some of those boys put out big kicks and you're like, Man, like I couldn't swim through that. So
wow, that's wild. So you get a bronze there in that event. Incredible. I want to talk to you about something that I think is amazing. And this is something that I think all athletes will get something from. You've got this book here that you said, I really wanted to show you this. And you've got a book where it's basically a journal of your Olympic campaign with different Polaroids and then a journal entry along the whole journey. Why'd you do that? Because I think anyone listening, you already told me why, but anyone listening right now, especially young athletes, this is something that I wish I did too. And that was where the question came for you. What's something that you wish you asked one of your friends who is an Olympian, what do you wish you did? And they told you to do this. So do you want to explain that story and what that book means to you?
Yeah. So like one of my really close mates, Mac Horton, like he'd obviously won in Rio and I was lucky enough to room with him in Tokyo. And like we'd grown close over the last few years before that. And like at the time, like he was really good to, you know, just bounce ideas mentoring, off and like such a great mentor. And like I implore anyone, a younger athlete on any team or any sport, like ask the older athletes, like they've been through, like you might not think it, but like all of them have been through the same journey you have. And like that would be my first piece of advice, absolutely. Yeah. But like I asked him, he's like, what do you wish you did more? And like he said, I wish I remembered more of like the experience, because ultimately like that's what you, like the joy that comes with the Olympics is from that.
Mm-hmm.
It's not necessarily from winning or losing, but like
remembering the day to day, the moments.
Yeah, exactly. And like for me, he said, oh, I wish I remembered more, which sparked this idea to, you know, take a photo each day and print it out using like a Polaroid printer, or use like some of the professional photographers that we had print their photos out. And like each day I'd like print a photo and like journal,
mm-hmm.
which like helped me a signpost each day. Yeah. And also like now I'm like, as I said to you, like I haven't opened this book in a little while. And like, I was like, man, like all the emotions come flooding back when you open it and you're like, it's really just a cool piece for me to have like this history of like, this is what happened. Mm. And like, you know, one day when I'm old and like have kids or grandkids and be like, you know, this is what I did. Like,
this is when I won the gold medal. Yeah. It's so cool, man. Like I got to flick through it and you brought your medals down here for me to have a look at. I think it was the first time I've held an Olympic gold medal. It's pretty cool. And then reading through that book is just, oh, it's so cool, man. And I know you'll get to look back at that always and just be like, wow. But you've got Paris coming up, so I want to see the next book. Are you going to fill in the back of that one, or are you going to get a fresh one for Paris?
I think a fresh one for Paris would be pretty cool. And I think part of the thing I would love to do now, and it's probably like only sparked it like right now, but like I'd love to start it earlier, because like for me this only started like when I got to the games, or not got to the games, but like got to making the team.
Yeah.
But I think like a lot of the journey, or a lot of the layers of paint are along the way, and like you remember more of that probably than the actual week that is the Olympics.
Yeah.
And yeah, like for me that's probably more important, that part of the journey, than anything else.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, it's so cool. I know any young athlete out there hopefully can listen to that and be like, you know what, take a journal. And my dad always told me, and I did this one trip to the Mentawai Islands when I was like 10. And I took a little journal and wrote like what waves I surfed on what day. And it's the only thing I've got from a journal. I mean, I've got another little one that I mapped out some of my surf heats, but I still every now and then look back at that little journal from when I was in this boat trip when I was 10 and read all the waves that I surfed. I'm like, oh my God, I wish I did that for every trip I did, just so I could remember. Cause it's so hard to have those, real clear memories of what you did. But when you have a photo under some words to do it, you can get yourself back into that moment. And so special. There's so many things I still want to talk to you about. I'm right around an hour, but I want to talk to you about Comm Games.
Yeah.
World record. And Paris, what's coming up. So let's go to Comm Games now. So Comm Games, a year after the Olympics, which normally doesn't happen, but it's in Birmingham. Two golds, silver?
Yeah.
Two golds and a silver. Talk me about Comm Games. What was that experience like?
Comm Games was an interesting one because we just had, like, I broke the world record in May.
Okay, well, let's go to the world record first.
Then. Yeah.
Tell me about that, because breaking a world record, like winning an Olympic gold medal is one thing, but breaking a world record is like, I mean, you'd obviously wouldn't swap it for your gold medal.
No.
But it means you're the fastest to have ever done something that so many people have tried to do.
Mm.
So, tell me about breaking the world record.
I mean, that was really surreal because I wasn't expecting it at all. Like, the couple of months beforehand hadn't been the best training I'd ever done, but they'd still been decent enough. And for me, like, mentally, I'd had to really overcome the post-2021, like, re-identity. Because it's like, you win Olympic gold and people say life changes, and it definitely does, but you decide whether it changes you as a person. And I think, like, I love the Bourdain quote, like, about the journey should change you. Like, as simple as that. Like, you should be growing, you should be changing, but people always don't really like to think like that. But
does it change you for the better or the worse? No. It's obviously going to change you.
Yeah, like, it was a unique experience that I'll never, or may never have again. Like, hopefully have the same experience again, but we'll see. But, like, you know, coming off the back of that mentally, like,
because there's a lot of things around, like, post gold medal depression. Yeah, what did you have a plan in place, or did your psych work with you at all? To, like, yeah, was there any support around that?
Yeah, I mean, like, I had a really good tight knit support system at that point. Like, you know, we had a really tight knit nutrition, sports science, and probably, like, obviously psych and physiology. So, like, we had those people and my coach obviously around me to really guide me through that. And, like, believe it or not, it was actually my nutritionist who said to me, she was like, you know, like, you're an Olympic gold medalist, who cares what you do next? Like, that's it. Like, you've peaked at the Olympics. And, like, not in a negative way, but in a really positive way, being like, whatever you do now is a bonus. And for me, that, like, completely flipped the switch of being like,
pressure away.
Yeah, it was like, oh, like, I don't have to feel, oh, I have to keep winning. It's like, no, like,
pressure's kind of come off a little bit. You've achieved the pinnacle, and then it turns into more of a personal challenge than, I can see that. Yeah, but it's a nice way to look at it.
Yeah, so that led me into the world record swim. So at our trials before the world champs last 2022, we had the trials, and I, like, was swimming well, so I'm a decent heat, like, really in control, and then. So, like, stepped up to the final and was like, oh, this is going to be like a 206 high, like 206 mid maybe. And I was just swimming really freely and really openly.
What was the world record at this stage?
206.12, I think,
1.5. So no one had ever swum 200 meters breaststroke under 206.
Yeah. And then, like, the guy next to me, Matt Wilson, again, like, he absolutely went out for it. And I followed him for that first time because I was like, ah, oh, fuck it. Like,
yeah,
I'm probably going to swim the time regardless. So let's just go for it.
Yeah.
And I did. And then, like, the third lap, I was like, oh, I've still got a lot to give, and, like, gave it a bit more. And then the last 50, I could hear, like, the whole crowd screaming. I was like, fuck, I must be swimming fast. Like, and then touching the wall, and it was like 205.98. And I just didn't register, like, what happened. And then Matt touched the wall and, like, looked at me. He was like, holy shit. And I was like, what? Like, and he was like, look at the time. And I was like, holy fuck. Like, and he was going, like, crazier than I was. And I was like, what just happened? And then, like, yeah, it was a weird experience. And then, like, having to come down off that and then go into world champs was, like, something that probably really matured me a lot.
Because that's an interesting one, because you go to world champs and you get beat and you get second, right? Or did you win that one?
So this 2022, I won world champs, but I didn't swim fast at all. Probably had COVID at the time. but I swam, like, 206.6, I think.
Isn't that crazy? Yeah, like 0.6 of a second is, oh, I didn't swim that
far. So 206 in the semi and then 207.0 in the final. So I just did what I had to do to win, I guess, in that meet. But, like, you know, and then coming off the back of that and getting COVID and then into Com Games, like, that was a weird experience, like, going in and looking at the board and, like, you have the world record holder, and you're like,
wow,
like,
that's cool.
It does add a weird element of pressure, being like, oh, I'm the guy to beat now.
Yeah, but
as I said to you before, like, I always bring it, like, now I'm bringing it back to that personal challenge and be like, well, I'm doing this for me. I'm doing this to explore myself and B, to see what's possible, see where the edge is. And I don't think I've found the edge. That's why I'm still going.
Yeah. So then you go to Com Games.
Yeah.
Two golds there. What, you won gold in the 200 and a medley?
Mixed medley,
yeah.
And then silver in the 100 breasts, which was probably my favorite, which was like, hang on, we'll get to, I'll talk about the 2 breasts and we'll get to the 100. The 2 breasts was kind of the redemption because I'd done, you know, the world champ, world record,
Olympic gold. Com was the one that you hadn't ticked off.
Yeah. And like,
and redemption four, from the last com gold.
Yeah. 4 years games. Earlier, I was like, fuck, like this sucks. So I was probably the most nervous I'd been in a long time before that race because I wanted it so bad.
Yeah.
I just wanted to win, like, and the process kind of becomes a bit of a backseat when that mindset kicks in. And I wasn't focused like I should have been and didn't swim as well as I hoped in terms of like speed-wise, but still won. And like coming off COVID and world champs and everything that had happened, like I was absolutely stoked with it. But yeah, like looking back, it wasn't the best
meet. But no. Not your best meet, but you still won 2 golds.
Yeah, but the 100 is probably like my favorite.
Yeah, so, tell me about that.
So at the time, like I wasn't really focusing on the 100 breasts that much. I was still racing it here and there and, you know, qualifying for trials and those kind of things and qualifying for the team for it. But I wasn't really focused on it. And like one of my best mates, Sam Williamson, was also, he was in the final as well. And he walked out before me. I think I was in lane 5, so I was second qual into the final. And Adam Peaty, who people may know, but he is like a Usain Bolt of the 100 breast. Wow. I guess, like, you know, revolutionized the 100 breast in terms of stroke and stuff. And like since 2016, he's been the guy to beat.
Yeah.
Anyway, he'd broken his foot beforehand and been a big comeback story for him to get there. And anyway, so like we're in the UK, so he's like royalty there. And like I walked out after him, but I remember them calling out Adam Peaty and the whole crowd just going like off. And it was like the first time we'd swum in front of like English crowds again. And yeah, like, so it was like 10,000 people screaming his name. And then I walk out and it's like not as big as reception or anything, but like, I was like, how fucking cool is this? Like, I'm in a race with like one of my idols and like, I just get to enjoy this moment because I had no expectation. And then touching the wall, second.
Behind him?
No, behind another Brit. And then Sam Williamson was third. And that was his like first international meet and his first international medal.
Wow.
So that was really cool to like stand on the podium with him and be like, how fucking cool is this? Like, we're at the top of the world, like together. And it was just like a really, really cool moment because it was like one where I experienced that like stillness and excitement again.
Yeah.
And then to share a moment like that with like one of your
Aussies,
it was unreal.
That's amazing, man. What a crazy journey. And that takes us to last year. Actually, I just want to really quickly touch on getting second in the world titles because I think I sent you a message maybe after it, or we maybe had a bit of a chat after it, because that must be hard when you're the man to beat, you're the reigning Olympic champion, the reigning world champion, the world record holder, the reigning Com Games champion. And then you go to world champs. Did the guy break the world record to beat you there? Okay. Yeah. Well, there you go. So tell me about that, mate, because you go into that world champs. Were you confident going into that? Or was there the guy who, was there the guy who beat you? Was he like building and getting better and starting to get closer? And was that?
Going into 2023 world champs, like I definitely not had the best prep. Like I'd had a stress fracture on my rib like 6 months before that. I was kind of not still recovering, but like, we were cautious to do whatever we were doing. And I probably lost that motivation after that. And going into that, like I knew I wasn't fully cooked, like ready to go. But like I had to park that and just get the best out of myself. So I was really happy with second, but I wasn't happy to lose the world record. Like,
So what, how close he, you said he got it by 0.4 of a second or something.
Yeah, so he went 205.48 and I'm a 205.9.
Wow.
Yeah, so like a significant chunk of time. And he, you know, like...
swam a blinder.
Yeah, didn't really like come from... like he'd swam a few 207s, but like no one expected him to swim. Yeah. Like, so for example, like he'd won the 50 and the 100 and he'd run the 100 in a really... wicked time. So everyone was like, he's a
beast breaststroker.
Yeah. Everyone was like, he's the 150 guy, like now, like he's the 50, 100 guy to beat. And we were like, all of us 200 guys were like, oh, like he'll be in the final, tank, but yeah, like he'll die off. And then we all got to like I talked to a few of the guys afterwards, and we like all said the same thing. We like got to the 100 and was like, oh yeah, we'll get him now. Like just kept going. We're like, wow. Fuck, like shit.
We just had a meet. Wow, that's crazy.
Yeah.
See, how was that after that event? Like mentally, like you said, you're like, I'm happy because I still competed well considering the injuries that I was carrying through the year and into the event. But yeah, losing the world record, losing the world title, and the external expectation maybe from the country, from the team, did that weigh on you much? Was it hard to overcome mentally after?
I think like the year before had probably taught me to not feed into those hooks too much.
Yeah.
But I guess mentally afterwards, like it was like almost what needed to happen, like as part of that journey. Like I think for me, 2023 represented a year of a lot more growth.
Yeah.
Than and mentally mostly, like, and maturity in understanding my training and understanding what I need to get the best out of myself. Yeah. And off the back of that, definitely like was disappointed. Like,
yeah.
No one likes to be second best.
Yeah.
Like if you're that close,
yeah.
It sucks. But at the same time, it's like, it's also a nice position to be in, to be hunting again, not hunted.
Yeah.
Because I think like there's the old saying of like, to be the best in the world, you have to be training like second best. Yeah. And I think I got complacent in training like the best in the world, like a bit laissez-faire about it.
Yeah.
And yeah, like for me, coming off the back of that, like it kind of was a wake-up call for both my coach and I.
Fire you up now for the Olympics this year.
Absolutely. And fires me up, but also like changes the way you have to train a little bit, because like we've lent on, as I was saying to you before when we grabbed coffee, like I've lent on my back end speed so much, and like this guy showed like, oh, I can fuck with you on the front end and still come back.
Yeah.
So like, how do we change that paradigm a little bit to be competitive on the front and still come back?
Yeah.
So I guess like for me, that was like a new challenge and a new pursuit in that sense. So changing like
everything up a bit.
It's more, it led to more excitement if I'm honest, like, to be excited again, to be like, oh, like he's trying to take it to a new place. Like, let's jump on. He's
trying to get the first gold medal for himself in the 200 this year in Paris. You're trying to get the world champion status back off him.
Yeah.
So exciting. So I guess to wrap up, I mean, there's so many things I want to talk to you about, because I love that you do other stuff and add into your coffee and everything.
Yeah, we can talk about coffee.
We didn't even get to talk about your routine or your training or anything, but we'll have to have you back on maybe after the gold in Paris. But lastly, what is the training? What's the schedule looking like now coming into Paris, Olympic year? Short period, 3 years in between this time rather than 4 years. What's the training looking like this year, and what's the goals heading into Paris?
Yeah, training this year is obviously intense. I think like last year is more, I described it as like the foundation, and building, this year's the polish, I guess. Like how do you refine that speed or channel that fitness into like a specific area? And like at the moment we're, you know, this is technically week three of the season, and like we're already back at 10 sessions, and like I'm racing this weekend. So it's like, you know, the daily routine looks like, you know, 5 a.m. wake up, typically an ice bath straight up into, you know, we get to the pool at 6:15, and then we'll finish up at, like swimming wise, we'll finish up at 8:39 and then we'll go to the gym or Pilates or physio.
Yeah.
So we'll leave the pool at 10:30.
Yeah.
And then, you know, we're back at the pool at 2:30 till 6 p.m. Every day. So apart from Sundays. And like everyone's like, do you get up early on Sunday? I'm like, no. No.
What about like gym work as well? Is there a gym at your guys' pool? So it's kind of like all in the same facility or?
Yeah, we're lucky we're QAS supported. So like we're at Sleeman or Chandler. Swimming Sports Complex. So they've just built us like a brand new gym in the last couple of years, like a year and a half ago, 2022.
Yeah.
They opened it. So
that's what happens when you have a swimmer winning gold medals. The funding comes a bit better.
We used to train
in the best successful year ever for the swim team. So you guys probably got a good bit of funding after Tokyo.
We had like the shittiest fucking shed beforehand. Like a couple, like it used to be the diving swimming gym at Chandler. And it was like one of those old school concrete slab
couple pop platforms.
Pop-up shed with two platforms in it. And in summer, I remember like one session, it was like a Thursday arvo, this shed had been cooking all day, And we went in and the coach was like, it's too hot to like stand in there. We wrapped towels around the bar because they were like burning our necks. And then he'd just be like, oh, you just rest outside between the sets. And we're like, God, what?
Training in a sauna.
Yeah. So we're very lucky to have a really nice air conditioned gym now. But, nice. You know, we're very lucky that we have a really cool facility. But gym's been a big part of swimming now.
Yeah.
And really something I like, I've had to progress. Like, you know, I've had to change that paradigm a bit because, like, you know, in Tokyo, for example, I was probably 71 kilos.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm 78.
Wow. So you put on some.
Yeah. You have to put on. Yeah. Try and put on some mass to increase that, power. I guess. Yeah. Power through the water.
Mm-hmm.
Because like that's the way the sport's headed.
Yeah.
And something I've had to just shift.
Mate. Well, there are so many more things that we can talk about, but I'm going to leave it here because I'm very excited to watch you in Paris this year. I've got plenty of people to cheer on and you're going to be very at the top of that list. It's been, really cool getting to know your story, man. Like you said, we've been kind of connecting on socials for a while. You've been a great supporter of the Good Human Factory, doing some stuff around gratitude yourself. And yeah, I guess supporting the work that I do, which has been really cool, and getting to share with you this morning a bit more about what I do. Hopefully we can, yeah, connect as the future goes ahead. Yeah, obviously a very good human with a great heart and a really positive mind. I'm going to get you sorted in a bit of merch as well before we go. But the last question I do finish all of my podcasts with, and you're going to know the question. Drop my ring. The last question I finished with is, what does being a good human mean to Zach Stubletty Cook?
I think for me, living by the values, living by your internal values and sticking to those. Like, so I think living with integrity for me is part of being a good human. And having, I think that encompasses having a standard. Like for me, it's always give your best.
Yeah.
And that's something I live by for better or worse.
Yeah.
But I think it's always been like, and for me, like the value of helping others and kindness is something I definitely live by and am willing to stand on that, like regardless. And I think that's something I've been brought up with as well. Like,
yeah,
I think that's what it looks like.
Love that, man. Well, beautifully answered. I guess lastly, just where can anyone find you to follow along the journey? Obviously social media is a good place and yeah. Last little chance to plug where they can find you.
Yeah, definitely just on socials is the easiest way to follow me and hopefully launching something with a bit of coffee soon. And
I'm sure coffee connoisseur. Yeah. I'll plug it when you get some. Send me some down and I'll get it out to the good human audience because I know I like a good coffee and I'm sure the audience will as well. But man, thank you so much for jumping on. If you've enjoyed today's episode, do me a huge favor. Make sure you chuck it on your Instagram story and tag both Zach and myself. Yeah, give us 5 stars, all that good stuff. But yeah, mate, thank you so much for tuning in. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Thank you for having me. It's been awesome.
My guy. Yee-hee.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.